My microphone woes continue. This seems to not work whenever I'm in this room. So I'm going to use the microphone in my laptop and try to stand closer over here. But again, just be aware, some things might not be captured with good audio on this lecture. Apologize for that. Try to get something sorted out soon. Any questions before we jump in? Anything that's going on in the course? Topics for discussion? If not, and what we've been talking about lately is the different classes and analysis of these resonant switch cells. Okay? And we looked early on the different types we might have, either ZBS or ZCS, quasi-square wave or quasi-resonant, and then really looked closely at the ZBS quasi-resonant switch cell applied in a buck converter. Reference to the idea that ZBS quasi square wave was looked at extensively early in the course, and the ZCS quasi resonant is covered in detail in the book Fundamentals of Power Electronics by Eric Smigiech. So, went through and we did the analysis of this ZBS quasi resonant switch cell inside a buck converter, sketched some waveforms, found that it did achieve ZBS, had pretty low current stresses, but high voltage stresses on the switch. State plane, went through and solved that state plane through averaging, where in the averaging step, we had something a little bit different than normal, where instead of simply averaging the output current because of this LC filter, it is we average the voltage on the low frequency inductor, which essentially had us come back and solve for the average switch node voltage, which would be the average voltage here. And then by virtue of this being an LC filter at the output, say the average of that voltage is going to be the average output voltage. Draw this out because we're going to build on that in a moment. Okay. So we did that averaging, went through and did our complete solution, found that our overall conversion ratio looks like this, 1 minus F times this big function of JL, which is called P one half of JL, where P one half is the name of the function that is this 1 over 2 pi times brackets 1 over 2 JL plus pi plus arcsine, all this stuff. Okay. And looked a little bit up at the behavior of that. So now, having gone through one of these, I want to talk about, really, for other parent converters other than the buck, for other switch cells, how can we generalize what we've just done? Okay. So I'm going to start by looking at a PWM case. So this was kind of our motivation early when we started looking at these resonant switch cells. We can take a parent converter and then extract the switching elements and look at those independently. And that's how we got to these kind of high frequency equivalent circuits for the switch cell and any resonant elements that are interacting with the switches at the switching frequency. So the idea here is that we are taking the switches out of the converter, examining them and their behaviors at high frequency, or what's happening over one switching period, where the resonant dynamics within one switching period. And we're abstracting it away from our large filter elements, LF and CF is a typical buck converter where those are small ripple type elements that really have no high frequency behaviors, right? Anything that's going on with these are the low frequency filter elements. Anything up at the switching frequency and above, any of the resonance that occurred at the switch node in this converter, it's all going to get completely filtered out by this LC filter. The dynamics of that LC filter at much lower frequency. Okay. And this begins to get into the idea of switch averaging, which we don't discuss extensively. In 481, I mentioned it briefly. In 482, if you've taken that class. But conceptually, it is really just another way to do the averaging of a converter. Okay, so we teach in 481 a waveform averaging, where I look at the voltage applied to my inductor and the current going through my capacitor and say the average of that has to be zero in steady state. I can do the same thing and get the same result in equations by averaging my switch cell, averaging my switching elements and the waveforms on them. Or a third way is state space averaging. If I write down the state space equation of this converter, average them, I can get, in every case, to the same small signal model, to the same DC equivalent model, using averaging as we've done in 481. Right? State space averaging we're going to look at a little bit later in the course, because that'll lead into the development of discrete time modeling, a generalized analysis method that'll work for any of these converters. For the moment, I'm just going to show that for this PWM case, for a typical buck converter where I don't have any resonant elements in my switch cell, I can do this and it's going to result in the same small signal model. So the idea here is I extract the switch cell for a buck converter. It looks like this. And I'm going to average these terminal waveforms, V1, V2, I1, and I2, and relate them to one another. And it's going to be exceedingly simple. I can say, in this type of a switch cell, a buck type switching cell, whenever this MOSFET is on, the output voltage V2 is equal to the input voltage V1, and that switch is on for DTS. So my average terminal voltage V2 is going to be equal to D of T times V1. And then the input current is equal to the output current whenever that switch is on as well. Diode's off. So that's going to tell me average I1 is equal to D of T average I2. For a PWM converter. Not applicable to all converters, and that all converters don't have the same type of switching cell. Okay. I'll go to a boost, flip kind of where the diode and MOSFET are, I'll go to a Jupiter Cepic, something else, the switch cell changes. For this type of switching cell, here's my average waveform for PWM converter. And what do those tell me is that this entire switching cell operates effectively like a transformer, right? So my voltage steps up or down by D of T. My current does the opposite. I have I1 on the left and I2 on the right.
So that means that the equivalent behavior of this thing is going to be this DC transformer. Ratio of 1 to D of T. And then if I plug this back into my parent converter, what I get is LC EG. This is my averaged but still nonlinear
equivalent model of the buck converter. Still nonlinear, and then I still have a time-varying transformer turns ratio. In this behavior, I have time-varying duty cycle times time-varying output current, time-varying duty cycle times time-varying input voltage, time-varying product. There's two time-varying terms, and the product of them that's fundamentally nonlinear. Okay. So if I wanted to do a linearized model, then I do an AC small signal equivalent model, linearize this to first order. That for a moment. The reason I draw back to this is because leveraging this, we're going to be able to very simply take the results from our analysis of a switching cell that is resonant and apply them into any parent converter, into a buck or a boost or a flyback, anything else. Okay. And the way that's going to work is, first, we'll look at what I actually did in the analysis of this ZVS quasi-resonant buck converter previously. So my high frequency was all contained here. And I went through and did state plane averaging and eventually wrote an expression for the conversion ratio
of this whole converter. But again, I did so leveraging averaging at the output filter to say the output voltage is switch node voltage, average switch node voltage. So what I really did is derived an expression for this,
and then based on volt second balance, said that average voltage is equal to the output voltage. So saying that that average voltage is equal to the output voltage is specific to the buck converter, specific to the fact that I took this green box, which is my switch cell, and then put an LC filter on the output and put VG at the input. Put it in some other converter, that conversion ratio is going to hold true. Okay, so I really have M that I derived was actually my switch cell conversion ratio. Just so happens in the buck converter, as here, switch cell conversion ratio D of T is equal to the overall conversion ratio. So in the buck converter, M is equal to D. Okay.
So I derived this M was some function of F and JL for the ZVS quasi-resonant buck.
But I did so
with the assumption, or based on analysis of what's going on outside of this,
my M is output voltage over input voltage, but in this case, I can also say
M is the average switch node voltage, or VG.
And with this expression, that really is
the characteristics of this switching cell itself. It's the output terminal's average voltage over the input terminal's average voltage.
Really independent of the fact that it's loaded by an LC filter.
So, more generally, for these resonant converters, I'm going to talk not about M, but about mu.
And I'm going to do my best to make my M's and my mu's look different, but the selection of variables there is from the book. I'll stick to that. Okay.
So, mu is my switch cell conversion ratio.
Which is this
average V2 over V1, as we looked at here.
What is the switch cell doing independent of the converter I placed around it?
For a buck only, M is equal to mu.
For everything else, M is some other expression.
So when I had a PWM converter,
mu was just D. Okay? This was the ratio by which my voltage scaled from the input to the switch cell.
U is equal to D.
For my resonant converter, mu is equal to this function of F and JL. Okay. What's going to be really nice about this, and why I'm kind of drawing this out explicitly, talking about how our results are really applicable to just the switch cell, is we're going to be able to, having analyzed that switch cell, get the behavior of that switch cell applied in any parent converter simply by replacing mu from one switch cell with mu from another switch cell. For a PWM converter, mu is equal to V. So if I take the conversion ratio of anything other than a buck and replace D with mu that I derived, that is now the conversion ratio of this thing with the resonant switch.
I replace D with mu. Any resonant switch cell. Get the behavior of the parent PWM converter with that switching.
And we'll look at an example of exactly what I mean there. Worded a bit obtusely. So first, I just want to summarize some of these different switch cells. So what we've looked at is bolded here on the second line, the ZBS, quasi-resonant, and then this half-wave operation. And the switch cell conversion ratio that we derived was 1 minus F times this P1/2 function. P1/2 is defined up here. P1/2 of X is this thing. So what we got is 1 minus F times 1 over 2 pi times everything in brackets. P1/2 is the 1 over 2 pi times brackets. So the overall conversion ratio of the switch cell, 1 minus F times P1/2 of 1 over JL. Typical PWM converter, the conversion ratio is D. And then if we go to full wave versions, this P function changes a little bit, this P1. And if we jump from ZBS that we analyzed to ZCS, the only difference is all of my JLs become the reciprocal of what I had previously. Something shown here. The conversion ratio in all of these is between 0 and 1 for the switch cell exclusively. This is, say, switch cell conversion ratio. But how we implement that inside of a parent PWM converter will allow us to use it in things like a boost converter where I can have an input-to-output conversion ratio, not in that range. Okay. In requirements, the full wave we mentioned briefly last class, ZBS quasi-resonant, requires bidirectional voltage blocking of your main switch Q, so your MOSFET, have something like a series diode or back-to-back MOSFETs. VCS quasi-resonant half-wave has unidirectional current. And I put an asterisk here. This is talked about in the book. It says you put a diode in series so that it'll passively shut off whenever the current tries to go negative. But as you know, implementing a unidirectional current switch with a bidirectional current switch still works. Even if you want it to never conduct negative current, putting a MOSFET in there is still okay. It just means you have to shut it off at the right time by your gate driver instead of letting a diode shut it off. So it says use something like this so that you don't have to get the timing of the MOSFET just right. When the current goes to zero, this shut off. Back. So may not have to. This voltage doesn't go negative on it ever. And then some limitations on load current range, those have to do with still achieving soft switching. Go outside of that, you're going to lose ZBS. Or ZCS. Okay. So with that, we've analyzed this one in class, but now we have expressions for mu, for any of these quasi-resonant switches.
Okay. And then we can begin looking at them in different converter topologies. So I'm going to do this both ways. On this slide, I'm going to take a couple of examples from the book, and I think these are problems out of the back. They're 20.2 and 20.1. So if I have this converter, how do I figure out what switch cell is in it and what which of these options here I should be considering? And then we'll do it in the forward direction. Say I have a PWM boost converter. How do I turn it into something that's getting zero current switching, the quasi-resonant switch? So first, just identifying what your implementation has. The idea here is the same as way back when here. I don't have slides before this where I started by doing it, but really to identify the behaviors with respect to high frequency switching of your switch cell, you're going to look at only what's going on at high frequency, which means any of my filter elements I can assume to be DC only with respect to switching frequency. So big filter inductors will become opens, voltage sources and caps, big filter caps will become shorts, and then I need to reduce my circuit until I figure out which of these four I have.
So, wrong one. Here's where we were. So I take this thing on the left, the flyback that's incorporated some winding capacitance of the transformer on the secondary, some parallel capacitance of the diode and switch,
and then has allowed the magnetizing inductance to become small such that it is a resonant element. And that part you may not know just from looking at it, that's stated in the problem statement on 20.2. Okay. So if I want to figure out what type of switching behavior this thing is going to have, if I design it appropriately, then I'm just going to look at the high frequency behavior, which means I can take my voltage source, say it's got zero AC component, it's going to be constant during the switching period. My output cap, which is a filter element, CF, I'm going to have zero AC component over one switching period. So this is this bulk filter element. And then what I'm left with is the remainder of the passive elements. To really see what's happening with this, I'm going to have to reflect the secondary back through the transformer in order to get everything together into my switch network. So that's going to look like my input is now shorted. I have a FET in parallel with this CP, and then my LMP,
the magnetizing inductance reflected to the primary, and then I'm going to push everything on the secondary through the transformer. This is the flyback, so the transformer is inverting, so I'm just going to flip it as I do so.
What that's going to do is result in something that looks like this. Diode here, capacitance CS, which scales as I go through the transformer, comes N squared CS. This secondary winding capacitance show up here as N squared CWS. Can't really fit in there. And this is my output voltage, which is shorted because it's got this large filter element. This looks like a bit of a mess, but because the input and output have both been shorted, everything around the outside here is all ground.
So I really only have one non-ground node left,
which is this node here,
and everything's connected from that out to ground. Right? So my MOSFET, all three of my capacitors, my inductor, and my diode all connect to that node, and then to something around the outside, which is ground, which
means my equivalent switch cell looks like everything connected to this top node and then coming down to ground. This is Q, this is D, this is some CEQ, LNP, where CEQ is the parallel of these three capacitors. So what is that? Go back and look here.
Everything effectively in parallel, so it's the top right plot. This is a ZBS quasi-square wave implementation. Of course, with any of these, just having those elements there doesn't mean I'm going to get zero volt switching or have these quasi-square wave waveforms. It requires that I analyze it, set the correct dead times, operate at the correct switching frequencies. It means with these elements included, I can behave in this manner if designed appropriately. All right. One over here on the right. I'm going to behave similar.
I have LP and LS are both resonant elements. And then at the output, I have
then buck-derived converters, equivalent LC filter of filter type elements. So those,
as I analyze at high frequency, switching frequency behaviors,
LF is going to go to an open, CF is going to go to a short. It's not going to matter because LF being open has already decoupled it from the circuit. And again, I'm going to reflect everything back to the primary, look at the equivalent behavior of this.
Also, my input voltage is going to go to short because it's purely DC. So my AC high frequency model is going to look like LP and Q. And then as I reflect everything back through the transformer, I get to LS big, it's going to become smaller, LS over N squared, diode, N squared, CR. Okay, so
what does this look like? I think, well, everything so far had only two switches. This looks like it has three switches left, MOSFET and two diodes. However, MOSFET Q is purely in series now in this high frequency model. This diode at the top here,
which was DS.
So those two
being purely in series
makes them one equivalent switch. This is just an ideal switch in series with everything else. And that is now a voltage bidirectional current unidirectional switch.
These two become
bidirectional or current unidirectional switch. Only a current flow one direction through this path.
Then with that in mind, those two are my effective switch, Q.
In my high frequency model, where I modeled it as some ideal switch.
And then the rest of this, I've got an inductor in series with it. LEQ is LP plus LS over N squared. And then this diode, D has some capacitance in parallel, N squared CR. So what does that look like?
I have some inductance between the two switches, capacitance in parallel with the diode. This is my ZCS quasi-resonant.
And based on what I had here, ZCS quasi-resonant, if I have this voltage bidirectional current unidirectional, I can further say that this is half wave implementation.
At least that I won't be able to do the full wave. Make sense? Any questions on that? Okay.
On the next slide, let's go the other direction.
And say I start with a PWM boost converter, and I want to achieve zero current switching through a ZCS quasi-resonant switch cell. How do I implement that in this converter?
So that is the one that we just looked at, which ZCS quasi-resonant in the bottom right here implies that I'm incorporating any inductance in series between the MOSFET and diode, and then capacitance in parallel with the diode in my high frequency model. So, how can I achieve that? Well, I can incorporate capacitance in parallel with the diode and inductance between the two.
Here's one way that I can implement that.
I actually have a lot of other options. I could put my inductance here and my capacitance here.
Because CF is going to become a short at high frequency, that green capacitance I just drew will still show up in parallel with the diode.
I could put inductance here and capacitance here.
I wanted, and because the input voltage is going to become a short, that capacitance will still show up effectively as in parallel with the diode. Inductance is still between the two. It's on the high side or low side. So I can do some combination of these or any single one. And then keep in mind, as we've discussed these things, what am I actually doing with these switch cells? On one hand, I could be adding these elements to control my switching behaviors. But either separately or at the same time means I'm incorporating these parasitics into the operation of the converter, making them so that they're no longer just unknowns that cause extra ringing and losses, but actually part of the fundamental operation. Means I'm really incorporating any capacitance from this node out to a small signal ground, and any inductance basically between
this terminal and this terminal in the power loop of this
this boost converter. So all three of these green inductances that I drew, any inductance I have in my layout or my device packaging, are now part of the operation of the ZCS quasi-resonant boost.
Now,
getting back to what we're talking about here, one of the really beautiful things is that I can now write the conversion ratio for the ZCS quasi-resonant boost, knowing nothing other than the switch conversion ratio from that table, this group, and having solved the boost converter before.
So, PWM boost. You'll allow me to not rederive. M is equal to 1 over 1 minus D.
Conversion ratio of a boost converter.
Now, I want to know the conversion ratio of a ZCS, excuse me, quasi-resonant boost. M is 1 over 1 minus mu of T. Mu is equal to for the ZCS quasi-resonant.
Whichever one we want to choose, or FP one half of JL or FP one of JL,
whether we're full wave or half wave, just stick to the half wave. F times P one half of JL.
And done. Now that's the conversion ratio as a function of F and JL.
Next thing we might consider is, well, what did we do next in the PWM case? We had this average nonlinear model that told us the conversion ratio as a function of a bunch of parameters. And then we wanted to be able to control that, so we did some small signal equivalent linearize. Okay. I'm just going to look back at how we do that for typical PWM parent converter and back to the buck with the PWM switch cell. So what we had from the previous slide was average V2 is equal to D of T times average V1. Average I1 is D of T times average I2. Again, these terms here are offensive terms. Average V1 is the average of a waveform converter that's potentially time varying if things are changing. And then D of T is my control action that's potentially time varying if I'm not in steady state. So if I want to know the response to perturbations in inputs or in the control D of T, I want to do typical linear circuit analysis, I need to linearize this equation. So when I want to have an AC model, I'm going to linearize these equations using small signal model.
There, I'm going to say, hey, there's some nonlinear relationship. If I look at that very closely for very small perturbations, unless I'm right on a discontinuity, any kind of function in a small enough space looks more or less linear. I'm going to look at very small perturbations around the DC operating point, and then linearize these either by doing a perturb and linearize, where I replace every variable with its steady state plus a small perturbation, or by doing a Taylor series expansion to first order. Very simple in the buck converter. But I could say, using hats to denote my small signal perturbations. So V2 hat is very small AC perturbation on top of whatever V2 was in steady state. V2 is 12 volts because the input of my converter is 12 volts. V2 hat is talking about a microscopic little AC perturbation at variable frequency on top of that. If I make that small enough, and my behavior is continuous, then I can linearize. Say V2 hat is equal to Taylor series expansion to first order with respect to all of my time-varying terms. What it's going to look like is the partial of D of T times average V1 with respect to D times D hat, the partial of that with respect to V1 times V1 hat.
This is very simple. It's going to look like the partial with respect to D is V1 times D hat plus V1 hat. My second equation, I1 hat, is I2 D hat plus DI2 hat.
These equations now define my AC small signal model of the switch cell. So when I took the original nonlinear average equations and plugged them into a circuit, what I got was a transformer. Now I can linearize them. What I'm going to get is still a transformer, these second terms, V2 hat is V times V1 hat, I1 hat is D times I2 hat. That still describes a 1 to D transformer. But now I have these terms,
V1D hat and I2D hat,
which are some kind of voltage and current injected into the circuit, which depend on my control action. If I were to sketch that thing out, it looked like a transformer where in series at the output, I have a V1D hat source. And in parallel at the input, I have an I2D hat current source.
That would look like this.
I've just copied out of the textbook, 7.17a. It should look familiar. It's exactly the small signal model of the buck converter derived many times by waveform averaging. Here we've just done it, jumping over by doing switch averaging. Why do I go through that? Is, well, this same behavior is going to hold. So whatever the average behaviors of my switch are inserted in this way. So if I want to know the small signal model for control purposes of one of these resonant switch networks, I can take the small signal model of the parent PWM converter and just replace my D's with mu's. Done.
Make this mu hat, this mu hat, and this mu,
my answer at steady state. This is now the small signal model of any of these resonant switch network bugs. CCS quasi-resonant, ZBS quasi-resonant, full wave, half wave. Any of them by replacing the expression for mu.
I replace D with mu, my steady state solution. And D hat with mu hat, my small signal perturbation, my PWM converter, AC small signal model, comes my resonant switch. Signal model.
Beautifully simple. Right up until the end of this slide. Because then, practically, when I go to do this, I have to look at that expression from you and figure out what's contributing to it. Because mu is nothing, right? Mu is the switch cell conversion ratio. And I don't have a knob I can turn that changes the switch cell conversion ratio. What I have is a knob I can turn that changes the input voltage, a knob I can turn potentially that changes the switching frequency. My controller can do that, at least. And then it's going to also depend on the output current, IL. Right? So this mu is this expression, as we derived it for the ZBS quasi-resonant switch cell. I'll go through the derivation here just using this expression, slightly different if I change to one of the other switch cells. Okay. Well, I don't have the ability to just control mu. Instead, I've got JL and F in here, and I can change things kind of inside of those, right?
The reminder that F is equal to FS over F naught. And JL is equal to IL over VG times R naught.
So previously in the PWM case, D hat was what I controlled. I have a PWM modulator, I change D hat, that's my control variable. As I replace that with mu,
I can't control mu hat. What I can control dynamically is FS hat, perhaps the input voltage.
Likely that's coming from somewhere and I don't get to control that. And then IL is a waveform of my converter. So this mu is going to vary with FS, what I want it to vary with, that's how I'm going to control it.
Then IL and VG is going to actually vary with what's going on inside the converter.
Okay. So in order to figure out a control model of this, we'll have to now do a linearization of this expression. Say mu is some linear contribution from FS, IL, and VG. Let's see, from these, it also depends on R0 and F0. Those are not going to be time varying, though, right? Those are both going to be things that once I design the converter, those are fixed. It's depend on the element values, LR and CR. It's not going to change those dynamically as the thing operates. So this case, what we want to use to control this thing, then IL and VG are internal waveforms. So we can then linearize this with respect to all of these variables and look at their contribution in determining mu. Before I do any of that math, let's just look at what that's going to result in. I hop down here. This means is that my small signal model, as I have it up here at the top, I can change from the PWM to the resonant converter case by just replacing D's with mu's. But mu is not an independent control variable. It's determined by IL, VG, and my FS. All three of these are going to sum together to determine mu. My control action is actually taken here.
Okay.
This is model
taken from the book, so it's actually here. This is my model of a voltage-controlled oscillator. Take in some control voltage, VC hat, and then produce a PWM waveform of variable switching frequency scale according to that. So GM of S is just for this many change in volts, how many change in frequency do you get? GM has better English than that, though. So this is what it's going to look like overall. We want to do a small signal model that's going to derive what these three terms are, AB, KI, and KC. And that's just going to be done by linearizing this expression with respect to all three of those time-varying variables, so FS, IL, and VG. What I'm going to have is mu is equal to AI times IL hat plus KC times FS hat plus KV times VG hat. Where AI is equal to partial of mu with respect to IL evaluated at DC, KC partial derivative of mu with respect to FS evaluated at DC, KV partial of mu with respect to VG evaluated at DC.
And a series of first order of three variables, the coefficients are going to be the slopes, the overall result with respect to that variable. So the linear perturbation around some steady state. Steady state is it's evaluated at DC. Take the partial, I plug in the steady state, and that tells me the slope right there with respect to each of the three variables.
Okay. I'm out of time. So we'll go through that math and look at an example next time, and that will more or less wrap up our discussion of these resonant switch cells. We'll move on to a new topic. Okay. See you Friday.